Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
We were talking about being a widow on the show yesterday.
You sort of go through the motions, you carry through, and it's actually the second year that hits more, because I suppose then, you know, it's not this time last year. It's not the first birthday without the person. It's not the first wedding anniversary. It's not the first birthday your child's had without your partner or your husband or your wife. So I suppose there's that, but also a lot of the support can drop off in the second year because, you know, people move on, lives move forward. You're trying to move forward, you know, especially if you've kids for their sake, because their lives do go on. And that's really important that, you know, you keep things going for them.
Venetia Quick sharing her story with us here yesterday. And we came in this morning and quite a number of emails from people actually who were in a very similar position got in touch because they want to share their story. It's Lunchtime Live at newstalk.com. Michelle is with me on the line today because, Michelle, you were listening to the programme yesterday. I believe your own husband passed away in January of this year. Is that right?
Hi, Andrea. Yeah, he did.
I'm sorry to hear
my
that.
Husband. Thank you. Yeah, my husband John passed away on the 27th of January this year. So very raw for us, I suppose, as a family. We have four young children. Our youngest is 5 and our eldest is 13. So it's just been a lot. It's a lot to navigate my own grief coupled with their grief and my own, I suppose, desire to make them feel better about a situation that ultimately I can't really. So yeah, it's just been really hard.
Yeah. Do you feel comfortable, Michelle, telling us a little bit about your husband?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, John, we've been married for 14 years and just had a really nice life, like really nice, really happy life. I suppose everything had sort of worked out well for us in the sense that, you know, we had nice jobs and John worked for himself. He was a builder. We bought a house. We were happy where we were living. We got pregnant easily. You know, the kids, everybody was happy and healthy and just very normal, I suppose. And then in December of this year is when he was just completely asymptomatic, but had said to me one evening that he was peeing a lot at nighttime for the last couple of days. And I was like, gosh, that sounds a bit like diabetes. Let me check your blood glucose. So I went and bought a glucometer and checked his levels the next day and they were really high. So he ended up going into A&E because it was a weekend and he was meant to go out with his friends because it was Christmas time and I didn't really want him going out with this kind of hanging over us. So anyway, the ball kind of got started rolling from there and he got diagnosed with pancreatic cancer on the 23rd of December. We were told it was confirmed and it had travelled to his liver and multiple other places, I would imagine. I think at that stage, I think by the time John kind of got in and they were discussing treatment, it was only really treatment to buy time. We weren't going to get anything else. So they didn't even do extensive scanning after that. You know, it wasn't going to tell them anymore at that stage.
Oh God, that's and he passed away then in January, is that right?
Yeah, it was the 27th of January.
So nearly a month later.
Yeah, we didn't really get any time, I suppose, to kind of process it. My background is medical, so I suppose I knew what was to come, but he didn't really until, say, more so mid-January. And I didn't really want to burst that bubble either, because I suppose when the person is still there, you're still clawing onto this 1% of hope. And it, you know what? It just felt too overwhelming to think of what the outcome was going to be. So, but yeah, unfortunately, he died on the 27th of January in a very peaceful manner, I suppose, with the kids all around him. And it was as nice as it could be in a very sad situation, which I'm grateful for, you know.
And the children now, Michelle, just sorry, what age did you say the kids are?
Roughly so they're 5, 8, 10 and 13.
So they're all so young.
Yeah.
And for you, that's Sure, it's incredibly tough trying to manage, you know, you handle your own grief and navigate all that comes with that. And then four kids as well, you know, from five up to kind of early teens. And like, I'm curious, you know, Michelle, like in terms of family and friends and the support networks that we hear about, like how has that been for you? Has that helped?
Yeah, just absolutely astounding. I said it at the funeral and I firmly stand by it that in the saddest of situations, we have seen the greatest of humanity. I'm just constantly blown away by the support that we're getting and that we continue to get. There's people just literally carrying us through every day. And I think we wouldn't be where we were if it wasn't for that. So I say it to the kids all the time that in a very unlucky situation, we're very lucky.
Such a lovely way to put it, actually.
Yeah, I just don't take it for granted. And I would hope that sometimes I find myself questioning, God, like, would I be this thoughtful if the same thing had happened to somebody that I knew? Or would I be that helpful? And I'm just blown away. I'm honestly blown away. There isn't a minute of the day that somebody isn't at the door with something, or like every time we come home, there's stuff left on the porch, whether it's, you know, food or toys or flowers or just everything, just absolutely everything. It's constant text messages to get the kids to places. It's, you know, the GAA club ringing up to say that they're foregoing the fees. It's school or Easter camps where, again, the kids were like, oh, we're not going to take any payment. It's just small, but it goes a long way for us, you know. So it's just, and my family are second to none, like absolutely second to none. Like, it just, I suppose I was conscious of, you know, the kids are in a lot of sport and John and I would have always wanted to be there at their matches, you know, just to support them. Straight away, like, all my brothers are on the kids' WhatsApp groups, you know, so like every time I show up to a match, there's always somebody from my family there at the sideline, regardless of whether I'm there or not, shouting them on. So it's just amazing. It's a humbling experience, I suppose.
You were listening to the conversation, obviously, in the programme yesterday, you know, and Venetia, and I'm sure a lot of that obviously resonates with you, Michelle, you know, and kind of the future and navigating that. But it's so lovely to hear that you have such great support, because it isn't the case for everybody, you know, and that's probably the sad reality of it. Like, so many people getting in touch and emails telling us, you know, about maybe feeling that they're very alone and that they don't have people checking in. But it sounds like you just have an incredible community around you.
Yeah, exactly. It's community wide. It's not even just family. And I suppose it's interesting because when you were talking about it earlier and you were saying that you were going to be talking about it today and the kind of loneliness that comes with this situation, I was trying to think, I don't feel lonely. I maybe feel a bit lost in my own identity, but I don't feel lonely. And my heart would break for anybody who does, you know. So it's just, I think for anybody who's listening, I suppose, and knows of anybody in a similar situation, and it doesn't even need to be a family member, it can just be a neighbor or somebody that you work with. It's just the smallest of reach outs goes a long way. You know, just a small, people coming up to me that I don't even know, or I'm getting letters, handwritten letters in the door of people who John did work for that I've obviously never met. And they were just like, oh, we had great crack on site when he was doing up my bathroom 2 years ago, or, you know, it's just small little things, and it goes a long way for me, and it goes a long way to the kid. Yeah.
I hope this doesn't sound patronizing, Michelle, but you yourself sound like you've great strength. You know, just talking to you today, you know, I'm sort of blown away by how nearly even composed you are, you know, and the rawness of all of this just 4 months out.
I think I'm probably kind of 90% adrenaline still, 10% something else. It's kind of, you find yourself nearly sort of levitating above it all. I do crash a lot, I suppose. But I think my feelings of pure protection over the kids just completely take over once they're around me. And like obviously our eldest in particular is finding it incredibly difficult. So I'm so conscious of kind of sitting with her in the evenings, and there's a lot of the times where the two of us just kind of cry ourselves to sleep. But I don't want to kind of, then when we get up the next morning and she's in a better mood, or she comes in from school and she's happy, I don't want to take her down because I'm then having a bad moment. It's really quite hard.
No, it makes sense.
Yeah,
I can
and it
hear what
kind
you're
of comes
saying.
and goes, it kind of sometimes, and sometimes I can feel bad times coming, and I'd be texting a friend going, oh my God, here we go now, and I sort of really crash down
Yeah.
for 2 days, and then I think when I go so low, I nearly can't keep my body like that. I end up having to sort of come back up out of it. So some days are just more manageable than others, and I just cling on to those days then,
Look, I have a message here, if you don't mind. I'm going to read it to you, and it's from, I don't know if you know Dan in Salins. He's got in touch, right? And he describes himself. He says, I'm a 45-year-old big manly builder, and I'm here bawling listening to Michelle's story today. God love her. She's an absolute star. Keep up the great work, Michelle, until you meet again. And that
That's
comes
so
in from
kind.
Dan. And I
Yeah,
think it's, as
people
you said,
are.
it's the kindness of community and friends and family and even, just total strangers as well that helps and keeps you going. Michelle, thank you for sharing your story with us today, because we wanted to give space again to listeners to chat about this, obviously following the response that we had to the programme yesterday, and thank you for sharing that experience with us. Dave, you got in touch with us too. What's your story?
Hi.
How are you?
I'm widowed just over 3 years now. It
I'm
was
sorry to hear
my
that.
wife's anniversary at the end of last month.
Oh God, 3 years.
Yeah. So we're still fairly in the thick of it. Like
It
I'm,
is, yeah.
we were together for 18 years. Actually, funny enough, we met outside our local church for the first time, and it's how my parents met. My dad came down to help build, and he met my mom. So it was a nice little connection.
Outside the church.
Sorry?
You said, sorry, outside the church. Is that what you said?
Yeah. She stopped me up to ask me to use my phone and bum a fag off me. And after that, I was absolutely smitten by her. But yeah, no, we were together about 18 years. We were only married for 5 days. She was diagnosed with a thing called triple negative metastatic breast cancer in this September. It was the 25th of September when she went into the hospital for the first time. And then 25th of March was her funeral, so exactly 6 months to the day. Which she was just she was diagnosed with a very aggressive form of breast cancer. Like she had a, we thought it was a cyst at first, but it went from being something the size of a cyst to an 8 centimeter tumor in the space of like 3 months. It was incredibly aggressive. They tried treatment didn't really do much. The surgery then on Valentine's Day of all days. But if you'd have known myself, Michelle, you'd say typical. And then after that, like she was kind of, they did a CT scan and everything seemed clear. But a couple of weeks later, it came back and it spread to her liver, and it was a matter of weeks. We got married in UHL. I just happened to make an offhanded comment to a nurse about we were supposed to me to register. Like we were engaged for like 7 years, but just the previous 7 years, like we had just illnesses. Like my mom got, my dad passed away a good few years ago, and then my mom got was diagnosed with lung cancer. And then when my mom was diagnosed with lung cancer, Michelle's mom died of a brain aneurysm. And then
Gosh, 3 months
later, her dad had a stroke. And then 3 months after that, he passed away. And then my mom passed away not long after. And then we had COVID. And then during COVID, we lost a baby to fatal abnormalities as well. So,
oh God, Dave. Yeah, there was just so much going on that you,
with a bit of a run of bad luck, and we were always the ones who were in the thick of it. We were kind of hospital appointments here, there, and in between all that. And Michelle was like, looking after her elderly grandfather and her grandmother and stuff. I mean, she put her life on hold. She put her life on hold to look after my mom for 6 months.
She
that's just
sounds
the kind of person
incredible.
she was,
Yeah, she sounds
you know.
absolutely
So
incredible. And when you were listening, Dave, to to the stories and Venetia yesterday and Michelle here today and others yesterday on the programme, being widowed, I suppose, and because unfortunately happens to everybody at some point, but I suppose when it happens so new into the marriage and relationship, and obviously so young as well, like what advice would you give maybe to somebody today that is recently widowed,
Do you know one thing I would say? I hope this doesn't sound bad, but be selfish. like, be selfish with your time and be selfish with your emotions. Like, and look, don't get me wrong, like that other lady was talking about there, like, we live in a small village border in Limerick, and the outpouring of love and support we got afterwards was amazing. Like, times like this, you really see the capacity human beings have to be good to one another. And I mean, like, our local pub did a fundraiser for our family, and the entire village went pink for one night for Michelle, you know.
Yeah.
And they raised enough money so I was able to take a full 12 months off work to, you know, to care for the kids, because my youngest was only 14 months old, you know. But, like, we can get wrapped up sometimes in worrying about other people's problems, and we tend not to put ourselves first sometimes. Like, I'm not being saying be selfish as in, like, don't help people, but, like...
No, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Put yourself...
You have to mind yourself.
Yeah, like, if you have friends and family, lean into them. Lean into them hard. Don't... Do you know, there's the usual Irish thing of, like, I see both your arms are hanging off. Are you okay? You're like, nah, I'm grand. Don't worry about it. I'll be fine.
Yeah.
Don't do that. If people offer help, take the help. If it's just, I'll take the kids off for an hour, or would you like a cup of tea? Would you like a chat? Do you know, like, the loneliness, I think, is something people don't... I put one thought about it, you know? The loneliness is one thing. Like, grief is such a deeply personal journey, but there are certain things that kind of go across the board. You know, loneliness is one of them. People you thought that might have been there a bit more aren't there, that kind of way.
And it really
that's
separates,
what I mean. Like, don't be,
doesn't it?
Sorry?
It really separates, doesn't it? You know, the people that you thought that might have been there and didn't show
does,
up, and,
yeah.
And maybe the people you never thought of.
And that's even what I'm saying about, like, about be selfish. Like, don't be worrying about those things, you know? Like, if you have support, lean into the support. Because, like, my family and Michelle's family, absolutely amazing. I cannot fault a single one of them. And I've three or four friends in particular. I would have got through, I would have gotten to here anyway because of my kids. Like, they're the ones that keep me going. But I wouldn't have gotten here in as good a mental state if it wasn't for a couple of particular people. And look, obviously, as time goes on, it ebbs off because people have their own lives to live, and you do eventually need to stand on your own two feet. But, like, if you're lucky enough to have people like that in your life, lean into them.
I think it's great.
They're
advice.
Not doing it and thinking, going home and thinking, oh, God, here we go. We've called into this fella today. They're doing that of their own free will,
yeah.
And they're doing that because they care. And I think there's something with Irish people. You know, we tend to be like, no, I'm fine. Just, I don't want to be a bother, you know. And you know, and even with your emotions, like my eldest has seen me cry God knows how many times because I want him to know it's okay to be open about your emotions and be open about these things.
David, thank you, Dave, for sharing, you know, your story with us today. And I know it's not an easy thing to do, by the way. You know, when people getting in touch and sending in emails and contacting us when they heard the conversation yesterday to come on. I really appreciate that it's not an easy thing to do. So I do want to thank you, Dave, for sharing your story with us and my condolences again to you and the family. Fidelma, I think, is on the line with us. Fidelma, good afternoon.
Hi, Andrea. How are you?
I'm not bad, Fidelma. You got in touch. I believe you were listening yesterday as well.
Yeah, I lost my husband suddenly. So one minute he was sitting in the chair talking to me, the next minute he was dead.
Okay, sorry to hear that, Fidelma.
About 2 years ago. So it was, just an overnight loss. But I suppose as time has gone on, and I'm delighted to hear Michelle has all that support, you know, it's really shocking the way to see people. Like I've neighbours that would cross the road and avoid me, you know, rather than not know what to say, and it's just really sad. But the journey has been very fraught for me, I think, in that I've come to realise that, you know, and you know, all the protests as well last week, I suppose, bringing things to the fore, you know, the lack of support there from a governmental point of view is absolutely shocking. I don't think you're supposed to be a young widow in Ireland at all, or a young working widow. For example, if you're sick with work, and if you're getting the widow's contributory pension, you're not entitled to get any sick leave, statutory sick leave. So you're left out hanging out to dry, you know, and you still have the same expenses, you know.
If you're in, like, receipt of the, sorry, Fidelma, if you're in receipt of the widow's pension, is it, and then you subsequently get sick, well,
yeah, so your widow's contributory pension is based on your spouse's contributions to PRSI, but if you get sick, then you're not entitled to sick any sick leave from the state. And if your employer doesn't pay sick leave, you're not entitled to get it. You know, so basically your contributions are null and void.
And like the difficulty and the stress of that, Fidelma, for, you know, I'm not, even maybe not for you, but I'm sure for other people, if that's the case, like that must be very difficult, depending on somebody's professional working experience.
Yeah, so I mean, if your company doesn't pay you or your employer doesn't pay you sick leave, you're down to living off the widow's pension, which is where I am at the minute, because I am out on sick leave, you know. So all you have is the widow's contributory pension. You're not entitled to household benefits package. You're not entitled to the working family pay. You're not entitled to anything. So your contributions are null and void. And then you're dealing with grief, and then you're dealing with kids and like the support. And I'm sorry now to be so down, you know. I mean, you're dealing with the loss of, I mean, my husband was the love of my life. You know, we met and got married within 6 weeks. We were together nearly 30 years, you know. And then to be dealing with, I have four kids as well, to be dealing with kids who are dealing with their own grief. My kids are teenagers, and it's very difficult trying to deal with teenage grief, you know, when they don't want to talk at the best of times. So it's just, it's very complex. And I mean, there's a great group, Widows Ireland, that's very supportive.
That's right.
Around the country, and that they have an advocacy group trying to lobby the government on this, you know, because you're really not supposed to be a young widow in Ireland at all, you know.
When you hear, you know, Michelle and Dave share their stories today, and your own experience, Fidelma, sounds different, obviously, you know, in terms of the support that's out there. But for people listening, what would you say to them? You know, if there's somebody in their life, or as you say, a neighbour across the road that's grieving and widowed, what help or suppose support would you say they could suggest, you know, in doing to support somebody?
I think exactly like Michelle is getting, go knock on the door, go see if they're okay, you know. And some days they mightn't be okay and might feel like talking, but persevere, you know. You know, just ask them how are they doing today, because some days it's about putting one foot in front of the other, you know. I mean, when my husband died, I just wanted to die. I just wanted to be with him, you know. I just couldn't believe that I left the room and I came back and I was a widow, you know. I think just be there. I'm very lucky. I have amazing friends. Unfortunately, they're not in my neighbourhood, but they have been absolutely incredible. So I am lucky in that way. But it's desperately lonely, you know. And your whole, it's the secondary grief pieces, you know, monetary issues aside. It's the, you know, who do you go on holidays with? Who do you, if you can afford it, who do you go out for a meal with? Who do you go, you know, it's your whole life stops. And I agree with that speaker you had on yesterday. You have to put on one foot in front of the other, and you have to absolutely live your best life. But situations don't make it easy at the minute, you know.
There's a text from a listener here who says, Fidelma, I honestly felt I was the only person in the country who felt that way. Everything that woman is saying is spot on. If you're young, working, widow, you're penalised with everything. As that woman said, the widow's pension is based on letting the late husband's contributions. So what happens to all the contributions I've made? We also did, you know, so well done to that woman for bringing this to people's attention today. Caroline has got in touch to say, I am... the amazing Widowed in Ireland Facebook group, and something people don't often talk about is how we lose the future that we thought we were going to have when our spouse has passed away. We always think that it's like having two lives, life with your other half and then life without them. And it's especially heartbreaking for our children. We can do so much in rearing them, but we can't take their own parents' place. The hardest thing now that I find 7 years later is the loneliness. So our Facebook group keeps us going. We have made the most amazing friends who get it. None of us ever imagined being in this position, but we have to be strong and keep going. And that comes in from Caroline, and she says she's part of the Widowed in Ireland Facebook group. And another listener has mentioned widow.ie, and we spoke to Grief Ireland here on the programme just yesterday. Fidelma, my condolences again to yourself, to Dave and Michelle, and my thanks to all of you for sharing your stories. If you want to contact us about this or anything we've been talking about, the email is lunchtimelive@newstalk.com.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan, weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.